Hello and welcome to the first of these Football Book Club specials. We're currently reading away in preparation for Series 2, which is going to be coming to you very, very soon. But in the meantime, here's a recording of a live show recorded in early March as part of the podcasting festival Superpod in Southampton. Now, there is a pumping bass throughout the recording because the event was directly above a club night, possibly organised by DJ Phil Neville, we don't know. But it was good fun, all raising money for a great cause in sport relief. And as we were in Southampton, we decided to read a book by a name synonymous with the city. A player who immediately comes to mind when you think of it, Mr. Southampton himself, Danny Higginbottom, the defensive Rock of Gibraltar. Man United kid and former Stoke City captain, over 200 Premier League appearances for Stoke, Sunderland and Southampton, he's worn more red and white shirts than Wes Wally, FA Cup runner-up, Intercontinental Cup winner and of course author, but let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
At one point, a pig fire makes him late for training.
He changes the formation on a whim because he sees ducks and goes, like, that's the one, 3-4-3.
Everyone in Holland is weird.
Yeah.
A player wouldn't be considered if they were tossing off in training.
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Dostoevsky, more Paul Konchesky. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we're going to be reading such classics as Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's Jimmy, Mark Schwarzer's Mark My Words, and Leroy Resenia's It's Only Banter.
That's ominous. Yeah. That is a really ominous title.
But today we're going to be reading Danny Higginbottom's Rise of the Underdog. And reading it with me, I'm joined by our book group of comedy writers, Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
James Balgin.
Hello.
It is incredible how many shirts of red and white this man has worn.
I realised that I'd confused Stoke, Southampton, Sunderland. It's sort of become one big blob.
One team.
Because of Danny Higginbottom.
Yeah. The only teams I thought of in red and white he hasn't played for are Monaco and Paraguay.
And there's still time.
There's still time for Danny. Gibraltar are kind of...
Sheffield United?
He played for Sheffield United.
Oh, he did play for Sheffield United.
He played for Sheffield United.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry.
Kidminster?
Yeah.
Cool.
What did you call them? Kidminster.
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 Yeah, there you go.
Kidminster. Kidminster.
Sorry. He didn't play for Kidminster either. But first, any memories of Danny Higginbottom, guys? Apart from the shirts he wore?
Well, as an Arsenal fan, I remember him as a Stoke player, and therefore, like, the red mist descends, and that's basically it.
Because he destroyed Aaron Ramsey.
Yes!
Okay.
He was part of the team that destroyed Aaron Ramsey. Well, you know.
Make note, do not mention Higginbottom for an hour. Or Stoke. James, any memories?
It's the Stoke days for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The long throws with his pal, Delap, and...
And both Southampton legends, Delap and Higginbottom. Let's head over to our best friends at Amazon and let's see what the reviews are saying about this book. The book has 4.5 stars on Amazon from 33 reviews. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
Compared to some of them, compared to Jermaine Pennant.
Yeah, Jermaine Pennant is the watermark of not good books.
Jermaine Pennant is the first thing on Amazon to have negative.
They actively stop you from buying Jermaine Pennant's book. There's a big thing that comes up saying, are you sure? it's a relatively good, what, 4.5 stars? That's not bad.
Yeah, no, not
bad. It's because he's a Man United player.
No, that's crazy.
I think
people have just got low standards. Here's a 5-star review from Nathan Johnson under the title Top Book. Brilliant read from a proper professional, down to earth. I need to type 11 more words. Ha ha ha. Great review on Amazon. I've also got another one from a guy called Jambro.
Jambro, that sounds like, yeah.
Jambro.
Yeah. Well, my email address is, I don't know why I'm giving this out. my email address is jamb something.
That's
and
true.
And so I'm now confused with whether I maybe wrote this.
Do you think he's like in a fan club of jam?
Yeah.
I'm a jam bro. I'm a jam bro.
Is it like an umbro pun?
No.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think so.
An unsatisfying umbro pun. Yeah,
whisper quietly to Mr. Ferguson, this is the Rock of Gibraltar he missed. Danny's book showed even though the start of the career may not coated in the sweet sugar, we hope... It was a brilliant story with plenty of ups and downs, especially the Belgian capitalised incidents. End of the review.
That's a horribly worded review.
Does that make everyone want to read the book? Yeah? Yeah. Oh yeah, I guess it's pretty exciting.
Whisper it quietly to Mr. Ferguson. Sugar-coated, goodbye Belgium.
Okay, as the show goes on, we're going to go into more depth about the book.
We're going to be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and everyone's favourite chant writer, Ken, is back with another incredible chant. We have a guy who writes chants. But let's first go round the group in a sentence or two. What did you think of the book?
I liked it. To a point.
The point when he mentions Arsenal.
Pretty much, yeah. So that's the first like two thirds before he mentions Arsenal. I was like, this is kind of fun. There's a lot of fun to be had here. There are lots of good anecdotes. There are some crazy stories about his Man United days where he keeps on saying, it's not bullying, I promise, and then says a horrible thing that they did to youth players.
Then he just goes on to describe loads of bullying.
Yeah. It's definitely not
but
bullying.
It wasn't bullying.
Yeah,
but there bullying was some in name bullying. Only.
Yeah.
James, would you agree?
Yeah, it's sort of like a love letter to Roy Keane. And
he does really like Roy Keane.
There's
which is
a
the
lot
opposite.
Of, there's a lot of love for old Man United players.
Yeah,
that is understandable.
Yeah,
but is sort of if you don't like Man United players, kind of unbearable after a while.
Not that anyone cares what I think. But
what did you think of the book, James?
I quite liked it. He seems like a good guy. Which is harder than you think, given the books that we've read. Like, they don't always come across as good guys. He does come across as a nice guy.
He comes across as a nice guy, and he has an understanding of his story, I think, which is...
He does.
Yeah.
And it's a very polite book, which is kind of unusual in a football... There's no digging out or anything like that. And
no.
I guess it makes it a little more boring, but I like that.
You like a boring
getting
book.
On with
more
each other.
Books were duller.
Yeah.
Before we get reading, I'm going to start with a motivational quote to pump you guys up. Okay. You good with that?
Yep.
This is a quote from Roy Keane. Listen, lads, basically... Oh, we can't swear, can we?
All the motivational quotes from Roy Keane will be very limited.
Well, use your imagination. Listen, lads, basically, you're ass. Try and enjoy the game. You're probably going to get beat, but just enjoy being ass. You can guess what S means. It doesn't quite have the effect
super.
Without swearing.
It means super. Like super pod.
Yeah. Listen, lads, basically, you're super pod. Feeling pretty pumped after that?
Yeah, I mean, that is the book. Genuinely, that's on the back of the book.
It sells the book.
That like, quote is on the back of the book. And it is a very weird thing to read as you get... I got this book through the post and was very confused.
That was the first thing. You go read,
thing I read,
you read
said,
the
like,
book as it comes through the letterbox.
Yeah, pretty much. I was sitting squatting by the letterbox, as I do every morning,
slow
waiting
down,
for the
slow
post.
Down.
And I just... The first thing I saw was basically your S. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. Yeah. That's a good
another,
thing to know.
Another day ruined.
Yeah.
James, how did you read the book? Let's have a little chat about the cover and the title.
Yeah.
It looks like a Rise of the Foot Soldier kind of spin-off.
It definitely looks like the kind of movie that would be advertised in the London Underground.
Yes.
With like Gary Oldman and...
Yeah, Danny Dyer.
Danny Dyer
there,
and
yeah.
like someone from EastEnders.
Tamer Hussein.
Yeah.
Tamer Hussein, though, is always in these things. Yeah.
That's a great pull. Well done.
Thank you. Cheers.
And the title is Rise of the Underdog.
Mm.
Which is sort of odd because he starts at that traditional underdog that we all know, Manchester United.
Yeah.
And like, it's weird because the majority of that book isn't really about, like, they sort of play into the underdog thing, and that's what the quote at the back of the book is about, you know, like, we're all rubbish and we don't care that we're rubbish and we're gonna win. But like, actually, that's not really the point of the book in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about overcoming adversity in this as such, I suppose.
No, I guess not. No, because
not as like as much as any football book seems to be.
I guess he talks about himself. Yeah, I guess he fits himself as an underdog because he's not necessarily the most blessed with talent.
Sure,
all the way through.
Yeah.
But also rise. I mean, he doesn't rise that far.
Yeah, it's more of
fall
like,
of the underdog.
Although he doesn't say how far
like,
the rise.
Gently
is.
Get lifted slightly higher of the underdog.
That's a good title.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
Slight elevation of an underdog.
Do you know what underdog means?
Oh, no, but I think there's a
he
bit
tells
in the
us.
Book that was useful.
Thankfully, the first page... Actually, the first five pages of the book, which is before the story
really
starts,
good.
My favourite page of the book. Noun, underdog. A person, team, etc. That is expected to lose a contest or a battle, or a less powerful person or thing that struggles against a more powerful person or thing. He didn't include the third option, which is literally being under a dog. Which is unusual to miss out the most common usage of underdog, I'd say. But yeah.
Very odd. It's a really weird start, because then he goes on to like the acknowledgements, or not the acknowledgements.
Before that, he has a quote.
Oh, that's the quote, yeah.
The quote, "Our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall." Do you know who that's by?
No.
Hitler.
No. Who's it by?
Confucius.
Oh, really?
He doesn't write.
But he doesn't say Confucius.
Yeah. Also, we are reading this book in real time. We're on page... currently on page 9.
You guys don't have, like, plans for the next few hours, do you?
Yeah. We're taking up the rest of Superpod just reading, reading this book word for word. And then we love a... oh, actually, Jack, you love the about the co-author.
Oh, my God. The co-author is amazing. So
he didn't write the book by himself. He had a bit of help.
He had a bit of help. So often these books are written by multiple people. This one's really interesting because it says it's about... It says it's Wayne Barton. Wayne Barton has worked in Hollywood and across the US and across the USA with names including Charles Baker from the monster hit TV show Breaking Bad.
I mean, if you're going to get anyone to write your book, you want to be someone who's been involved.
He's a natural choice.
I love the idea that Danny Higginbottom would be like, I need someone to help me write this book about my career where I played at Stoke, Derby, Sunderland. I'll get someone who wrote Breaking Bad. Obviously, that's a useful thing.
That seems like the kind of only person who could tell my story. What's big at the moment? Yeah.
I mean, Breaking Bad is a little bit of a rise of the underdog. So
I've never seen it.
I mean, I did.
I told Jack I'm the only person in the world who's probably more familiar with Danny Higginbottom's career than the show Breaking Bad.
And obviously, the scenes where he cooks meth are very, like, very good in this book.
Delicately handled.
Excellent chapters. Really well done.
Really, really good.
You get a sense of who the guy is. But it is, I mean, genuinely, the book is very interesting because it starts with, like, the end of Danny Higginbottom's career. Like, it starts with him saying, like, that was my career, that was. And you sort of read the book a few times being like, was that? Okay. I can't work out what's going on
it's
here.
It's a three-page book.
But that is basically how Breaking Bad starts. Breaking Bad,
I don't know why I'm looking at you.
But remember the first episode of Breaking Bad?
They're in the
first scene. Yeah. Like, Walter White comes out with, like, a gun his underpants. Yeah. And you're supposed to think, like, wow, oh my God, what's going to happen in this show?
You're listening to the Breaking Bad book club.
The Breaking Bad Danny Higginbottom book club, okay? That's what we're rebranding to. But what's interesting is that clearly I think Charles Baker, Warren Barton?
Warren Barton. The guy who helped him.
Wayne Barton, who helped write this, clearly went in and was like, well, what we did at Breaking Bad was we started with the end. It really hooked the audience. So tell me, Danny, what's like the most exciting bit of your career? And Danny thought for a bit and went, when I played with Wayne Rooney's brother at Chester City.
He talks about being a young lad, growing up, a United apprentice, entrepreneurial as a kid. He steals golf balls from a golf course and sells them back to the golfers playing for 20 quid a day. And I worked this out. That's $7,500 a year. If you do that every day and take a couple of days off for Christmas. Yeah, I know, right? That's a good wage.
It's a really good wage.
Far more than he got at Stoke City.
Right. More than $7,500. Yeah.
Well, with the relegation, you know.
Yeah,
that reminded me. I used to do that when I read that story. I used to do the exact same thing when I was a kid, but not sell them.
Just keep them.
Hide in the bushes and they'd be looking for us.
That's so weird.
But we stopped doing that a few weeks ago, so it's all good now.
This must be a man after your own heart when you read this. Like, Danny, finally, someone who gets me.
He does it, but he was selling them. What an entrepreneur.
You got to sell them.
Did you steal Brussels sprouts like he does as well?
Oh, don't ruin it.
Okay.
We can't know about that.
But then otherwise, apart from that, he's learning a lot of lessons from his dad throughout the book.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice. He learns that if you upset someone, you need to fight a child. Which is an unusual lesson to learn from someone. It's on page 30. Let me find this. He makes a bet that Liverpool are going to beat United. He was goading me until I just smacked him as hard as I could and I ran home because he wouldn't pay the bet. Dad was waiting at the door, and you might think the way he would kind of get him to resolve it is just go around there straight away, give him the money, say you're sorry. No. His dad dragged me out of the house and back to the park, telling me to knock on the lad's door and have a fair fight with him. I said, are you joking? He was 2 years older than me, but he wasn't joking. He said I wasn't to come back to the house until I'd done it.
You've beaten up a child, okay? That's the rule.
And then after that, he does that, and he goes, great, now... tomorrow, go back and give him that money.
He also says, I did what he asked. We were fighting for about half an hour until he hit me. That is such a long time to be fighting a child.
Until he got the first hit in as well. So they were just
like, going, oh, watch it. Yeah, dancing and dodging. So odd.
It's also weird how his dad didn't go along to sort of supervise that in case it really did get out of hand. He's just like, just come back.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay in the house.
Don't come back, you might get us even more. But then he gets his big break. He goes to Man United.
Yeah.
He does all right at United.
Yeah.
They loan him out to Belgium, to Antwerp.
To Royal Antwerp.
Royal Antwerp.
Another red and white team. The United team does seem to be crazy.
Yeah.
Filled with very severe people.
I think this is another good time to mention something which has been a theme from a lot of the books. Psychopathic pranks.
Yep.
Like, footballers are... they like pranks. I wouldn't say they're good at them.
I like the idea of them, certainly.
They use a lot of... there's a lot of urine involved.
There's
in,
a lot of urine.
In Danny Higginbottom's pranks. Not Danny's urine necessarily.
It's a whole bath of urine. I was wondering who is filling that up.
We should also say these aren't Danny's pranks. These are like the Man United pranking the youth players. You know, pranking people who are in a much worse situation than you or in like a much lower down power structure. kind of pranks.
Those pranks
where you're punching down.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one where it's like one player didn't clean something properly, so he had to like lie in a bath of urine. This is a like Man United's. Oh wait,
he had to lie in a bath of urine.
Yeah.
Have something written on him in like shoe polish. Yeah.
And then
getting another bath of urine.
Yeah. and then like also another bath of ice and urine.
So they filled up two baths with piss.
Yeah. That's just a lot of... That would take so much effort.
Yeah, really.
That's just so much work.
Right, we're going to punish you. Wait, hold on for half an hour.
Okay,
we're drinking loads and loads of water.
We've got to drink a lot of water, okay? Oleg and Solskjaer, you have to drink loads of water. It's really like...
It's character building.
It's sad a little bit in the way that Danny Higginbottom talks about it, because he's like, oh, you know, it wasn't bullying. It was just, it was fun. You know, we had like players, like there was a kid. One thing we would do is like they would get these really old hard Umbro balls and kick them really hard at our naked bodies. And there would be marks all over our bodies. And it was great and fun. I'm like, Danny, who hurt you? I know who hurt you. Man United players.
He goes to Belgium, like we say. He has quite a good time there. We just read Jerzy Dudek's book, and everyone in Holland is weird.
Yeah.
Is what we found.
No, we don't want,
when
we don't
he
want
played
to
at Feyenoord.
You know,
yeah.
We don't want to stereotype at all, but that's, everyone in Holland is weird.
That's I thought that before I read the book. But
there are lots of odd things that happen in Holland.
Very strange. But it turns out Belgium is even weirder.
Belgium is probably, weirder.
Very, very, very fanatic fans.
Yeah. Good in a way, but yeah.
Yeah. No. They're very. When he first gets there, they lose 5-0 in their first game, and he's immediately targeted by some fan who goes, "You effing English bastard, take your passport and F off home. We don't want you here. You're S. Very nasty.
Very nasty.
He's 19 at this age.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't want to play here anymore. Understandable, really. He's basically just turned up in Belgium and they say, like...
That's his greeting at the airport, effectively.
Yeah.
next thing, he get then the next... they win a game.
One game.
They win a game and there's like they're in a changing room which is covered in glass.
Yeah.
And next thing, I hear this loud banging and wonder what it is. The other lads seem oblivious to it. After all, looking around, we realise the noise is coming from above. This fella is still on the roof, the same one who abused me 3 weeks earlier. He's pointing at me, takes his top off, and points to all of his Royal Antwerp tattoos, crying his eyes out. Sorry, Danny, I love you, he's saying. When he leaves the change room, he's there waiting for me with tears in his eyes, giving me a massive hug, and in his broken English, apologises again. Antwerp is my life, I was too quick to judge, I didn't understand you had to adapt and that you're so young.
That is very unbroken English, can I say?
Yeah, true.
Adapt and... Yeah. please forgive my terrible English, but I did not understand the quite complexities of adapting to this game.
This guy co-authored the book.
Yeah. he worked on Breaking Bad. He's very good. Yeah. He's very good.
But then another point, the fans strip him naked for some reason.
Yeah, the fans say, like, they strip him naked, and then also a stripper comes along and, like, pours whipped cream on him.
That's when he's waiting. No, what's happening is
they're two separate things.
That is two separate things, but he wants to get a...
he wants to get, like, a flat.
He wants to get a flat, and he says, like, have you figured that flat out for me? And they go, I'm sorry, Danny, we haven't. They're, like, at a meal. And then they make him sit down, and then a stripper, like... gets naked in front of him and takes his clothes off, and they go, we got you the flat. I mean, that's exactly how I first rented a place as well. That's how the agreement goes.
Yeah.
Foxton's march in.
All stripped down naked.
Here the cream of baby. Yeah. but the fans, I'd gone from being chastised to almost like a hero in the space of a few weeks. I say that not because of some inflated sense of self-worth, but because of how they made me feel. They made up songs for me. With my surname, you can appreciate how difficult that must be. And you know what? That is difficult. It is very difficult to write a song around. But luckily, we have a guy on the show who makes football charts.
Oh my God.
So I set him the task of, I set him the segment. I said, Ken, we need you. Danny needs you. Can you come up with a chant for Danny Higginbottom? And Al, I believe we can play this in a second.
Hello, Southampton. It's Ken here. Hope everyone's enjoying the show today. I understand this week you've been indulging, luxuriating in the wise words of one Danny Higginbottom, and it was brought to my attention that Danny always enjoyed when fans would sing chants about him because his name was a little awkward to squeeze into songs. So, Danny, this one's for you. Hope you enjoy it. Higginbottom, striding down the wing, Higginbottom, how you make us sing, Higginbottom, you're so solid at the back, shutting down every attack. Oh, Higginbottom.
Oh, Ken Zong,
Ken Zong, Ken Zong, Ken Zong.
Oh, amazing.
That was so good.
What was that?
What song was that? Are you
joking? What was the melody?
It's Pretty Woman.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Never seen it?
Good work.
Says Danny Higginbottom.
Yeah.
It's all about the first time you signed for a flat. Yeah. A prostitute comes in and...
right at the end of the movie. You got the flat! Yeah. Oh my god.
Belgium's weird. Everything about Derby sounds weird as well. So he leaves He leaves United after. He does fine, but I don't think he. What are you laughing at?
Everything about Derby sounds
Everything
weird.
About Derby yes. is weird. He leaves United and then, like, well, when he. When
he's not going to get an extended run.
He,
yeah.
he just follows Rory Delap around everywhere, basically.
That's true.
Yeah, Derby. That's when it starts, anyway, doesn't it? Yeah.
Southampton, Stoke.
If that's the only reason he went there, he was like, you don't wear red and white, but Delap.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably it. And everything is strange about it. James, I know you like Jim Smith and his ducks.
Oh, his formations.
Yes.
He changes the formation on a whim because he sees ducks in a formation and goes, like, that's the one, 3-4-3.
This is a really important, like, match.
Yeah, this is like a relegation scrap or something.
It's like they're right at the end of the season in 2001 or something. Like, Derby have to win these games to stay up. And he just, like, randomly looks out the window and I guess sees 11 ducks flying past his window in a 3-4-3
I see them
formation.
On the ground.
Oh, really?
Just,
oh,
yeah.
I thought they were on the ground as well.
Oh, I really want them to be flying through the air. And then I would like Jim Smith to be watching them being like, it's really hard to get through them. Wow. They're passing really well on the wing. These ducks are incredible.
Unless it was less complex than that. He was just like, I don't know what to do. Just give me... Someone give me a sign. And he's looked out the window. And it's... The ducks, 3-4-3. That's the one.
Do you think a duck quacked 3-4-3 at him?
Yeah.
I hope so.
How did duck sound? I can't do it. Oh,
did
duck,
they win
yeah.
that? Three, did they win?
That's impressive.
Is it? It sounds horrible.
Did the formation work? I forgot.
I think it did work, actually.
That's the kind of maverick Jim Smith was.
Yeah. Jim Smith changing the formations on based on a duck, yeah.
I thought Paul Boateng was weirder. Do you remember Paul Boateng? I vaguely remember him. I think
vaguely.
Like a fullback or something.
This book is really fun for the amount of people you're like, oh, Terebo West! Oh my god! Malcolm Christie! Oh my god!
Yeah. Paul Boateng, before games, he'd sit and count toes.
Oh my god.
His own? That, other people? Never, I don't know never, what you're talking about.
How
every time it's going to be 10.
Yeah. It's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Uh-huh. Well, I like the idea that it would, because actually Danny Higginbottom talks about how, like, before a match he would get loads of adrenaline and really need the loo constantly. Mm. And he'd just be like, I'm angry. I love the idea that next to him is just, Paul Burton being like, 1, 2, 3, 4. Danny, may I count your toes? Get away.
And Jim Smith, 4, 3.
Be not... more duck-like. Come on.
Derby
in general is very odd. The whole thing.
That's about all that happens,
no.
really.
Well, there's Derby. Also
ducks and toes.
Ducks and toes is kind
That's
of odd.
That's a Step Brothers song, right?
That's such a niche thing.
But then he goes to Southampton, and we did Graham Souness's book at Christmas.
Yeah.
Because what says Christmas more than Graham Souness? And there's a great segment in the book where Graham Souness is about as Graham Souness as he ever gets. It's a bit of an intense game, and there was some needle between Souness and Dennis Rofe, who was one of our coaches. When Souness had been the manager of Southampton, Southampton.
Yeah, we're getting all those references in.
Souness fans? Cool.
That's half more than Rory Delap got. So
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
good.
Well, it's good.
Yeah,
it's good to know the pecking order on the Delap.
Souness, Delap, Higginbottom.
As we're coming back in from the game, Souness is shouting, "Come on, Rofe, let's have it now. You and me, let's find a gym and get it on."
Which is... It has all the aggression of a Graham Souness line, but all the love of a, yeah. Of a Mills and Boone line. It's great. Find a gym and get it on.
Also, Gordon Strachan is the manager of the time. Any cheers for Gordon Strachan?
Yeah.
This is hilarious. Better than Souness.
Better than Souness. Okay.
Worse than Delap. We've okay. only come here to understand the yeah. people of Southampton. The only, the crudest way we can. Yeah. there's a great moment where Gordon Strachan kicks a skip.
And, there is, yes, which yeah. Is
we,
one of the...
We yeah. love kicks... Skip kicking.
We do love skip kicking. Strachan is odd in this book because again he gets him right up in Huckabee as well. There's a point where Gordon Strachan says to them when Southampton play in Europe, excitingly in 2000 and I want to say 2003-4
Storybook Arrest.
They go out to Storybook Arrest and Gordon Strachan says, great game guys, but one question: why did you start going for it at the end of the match? You know, if the score had stayed the same, we'd have gone through. And all the players go, what? Is that true? And he goes, yes, it is true. You absolute idiots. You stupid players. And talks to them for goes into them for like 20 minutes with all these players, like, feeling very sad because they've just gone out of European competition. And as they're showering, feeling really bad later on, Strachan comes back in and goes, my mistake, guys. There are no away goals. See you later. Bye. Just such a Strachan thing to do. Oh, it's great.
He's, I don't know who I prefer for their team talks, him or Harry Redknapp. Redknapp, not a popular figure around here, is he?
No. Any
Spurs...
Portsmouth fans in?
Oh my god. Where did that come from? Is that a ghost?
Yay!
Was that Harry, Jamie Redknapp?
Yeah, Jamie Redknapp.
Next door. Coming through.
Say terrific twice. Never mind.
There's a great moment where Harry Redknapp is manager and some of the players aren't pulling their weight. I think they've just signed a couple of players on loan. This is when you're in the Championship. Sorry to remind you. You're in the Premier League now. It's all good.
You did fine today.
In March 2005, we played United in the sixth round of the FA Cup and got battered 4-0. This might be the last season in the Premier League. It was an absolute embarrassment. For those of us who've been there for a couple of years or longer, it was obviously a huge disappointment to reflect where we'd come from and where we currently were. In the dressing room, I didn't hold back. It's an effing disgrace. Some of you lads don't look like you give an F. Go on then, Danny. Name names, says the manager. Say who it is. You've got two talented players here. Two very talented players. Olivier Bernard and Henri Camara, but out there today, they didn't like they were bothered. Oh, you can't do that. You can't name names.
Oh, they'd be like, oh, no.
I can imagine him saying that so yeah. well.
Oh,
like,
no.
Go on, name names. Name. Oh, you can't name.
Oh, don't name names. What you doing? Is it Sandra?
Sandra.
Sandra. Yeah, Sandra. What are you doing? Name Sandra.
What are you doing in the changing room, Sandra? Yeah.
Sandra. Yeah.
Let's do an out of context Higginbottom. Have you got a line that you like a lot in the book,
oh,
James?
Yeah, give me a sec. I'll find it.
Or Jack, have you got a line you'd like to
I do.
Give us?
It is early on in the book. Dad said that Brian Kidd called him into his office and asked him, what colour's your house?
That was out of context Higginbottom.
There's a funny bit where in the book, Danny forgets what football's called. Did you notice this?
Danny does.
No,
yeah.
Danny.
What does he say?
He's talking about Clive and he goes...
You always notice something that none of us... Hey, hang on.
You know this bit where Danny Higginbottom was an alien? Do you remember that bit?
He said, Sir Clive achieving the ultimate success in the game with England, rugby, in the World Cup. It had been mentioned quite often in the media that he might be the man to bring a revolution to the round ball game. It's football, Danny.
I bet there was a bit that was square brackets. Look this up later.
Do not print.
That is so odd.
That
Such
is really
odd
funny. Clive Woodward, though, yeah, wasn't really.
Not
was,
really.
Wasn't
not
for
good.
Football.
Yeah, not
great
a really
for
good person.
Great for oval ball game.
Yeah, classic. For
not
oval
good
ball
for
game.
Round ball game.
Yeah.
Guys, do you want to play this week's game?
I'm so excited about this
yes.
game.
This game, I hope this theme works, this game is called Danny Higgs Boson.
Brilliant.
Everyone know what the Higgs Boson is? Cheers with Higgs Boson. Where's Higgs Boson
yeah.
on
okay,
the
so goes,
Dillap scale? Yeah.
Franny Benali, very high up. Rupert Lowe,
yep.
very bottom. Higgs boson.
Higgs boson God particle. In the
somewhere
middle.
In the middle. Okay.
So the yeah. Higgs boson is the God particle,
the
right?
God particle.
The one
yeah.
which they're trying to.
Or
remember.
The Letitia particle. Two people.
Yeah.
yeah? Oh
yeah. Of course. It's nice. Where they try to recreate the Big Bang, right?
Yeah.
The Higgs boson helps them to figure it out. So that's the God particle. It was discovered by the people of CERN in Switzerland.
I can't believe we're doing this.
You have to tell me if this is a scientist who works at CERN or a national team player for Gibraltar.
Of course, it's this.
I reckon I can do this.
If it is a Gibraltar player, you have to say rock. Rock of Gibraltar.
Sure.
If they work at CERN, you have to say rocket science.
Okay.
Number one, Adam Priestley. Rock or rocket science?
Rock.
Rock.
I think he's mentioned in the book.
Is correct.
Yes!
One. Okay, I'll give that a little tick. Number two, Joseph Incandela.
Oh, rocket science.
I would go rock.
Okay, you're going rock. You're going rocket science. James is right.
Ah!
He does work for CERN. Fabiola Giannatti. What are we going for?
Rock.
I'm going rock science. Jack's right.
Yes!
Is Rocket. Also the first woman to be Director General at CERN.
That's cool.
You go, Fabiola. Number four.
I thought Danny Hickabottom's book would be where we got, like, really, like for feminist ideals. I really like that. This is the time we do it.
Yes, exactly. Number four. Roy Chunky Rodriguez.
I reckon they all call him that at CERN. All right, it's Chunky. Hey, start that particle.
Roy Chunky Rodriguez. Yeah. Rock or rocket science?
Rock.
No, he's neither. I made him up. Ayub El Hamidi.
Rocket science?
Rock.
James is right, and you guys are right. He is a Gibraltar player. Guido Tonelli.
Rocket science.
What are you thinking, James?
Whatever.
Rocket science. Amel Baraba.
This has just become names, hasn't it?
Rock.
Rock.
Neither. She was in the Sugar Babes.
This isn't allowed. These are tricks.
Jeremy Lopez.
This is hell.
Right.
Rock.
Rock is great. And finally, yes. Darren Huckabee.
Rocket science.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Works for CERN. Cool. At the end of the game, football's the winner. James, you got your out of context quote for me?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then we should talk about Stoke and Sunderland.
Yeah, he leaves Southampton under a cloud, weirdly.
Yes.
Like, he does, like, a thing in the press saying, slamming everyone, slamming all the managers like Paul Sturrock and Wrigley and... Wrigley?
Steve Wrigley.
Wrigley, not Wrigley. Wrigley, chewing gum. Wrigley, Southampton manager.
But mind you, Wrigley, the people behind Chang, could have been manager of Southampton at that time. You had pretty much everyone else. Yeah. So, yeah, could have been, yeah.
But there's a bit where he's like, I'm going to do a big thing in the press saying how bad everything is. And the club chairman, like, stops him. They stop from going to press. Like, we will make sure you never play for Southampton ever again. And he's like, that's fine, I'll go to Stoke, which is basically the same team. And he... At this point.
Stoke got much better than Southampton. But, that's true, yeah.
Look, we're going to need a police escort out
yeah,
there.
Okay.
And then he goes off to Stoke. Yeah. Finally, we can, pull it off. Stoke is slightly odd because they're called the Battersea Dogs Home.
Yeah, that's the name of the chapter in this thing.
It's really weird how he's like, oh, back in the 90s or back in the 80s, there was the crazy gang at Wimbledon. We were known as the Battersea Dogs Home. What? No.
It doesn't really make any sense.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
No one has ever called
Stoke Battersea Dogs Home.
First of all, it's in London.
It's in London.
He doesn't explain it either. He doesn't elaborate.
I suppose the idea is like, oh, you know, it's where the old team used to play, or like, and as in like, we're where people who are down on their luck come. He's doing well at Stoke for a bit.
Yeah.
But then, as they're getting really good, and he starts to be, like, the main guy at Stoke, mm-hmm. he randomly apparently hears, like, a chat radio show on the, like driving home one day that says whether the owner of Stoke, Peter Coates, is asked, like, oh, you've had a bid for Danny Hickabottom from Sunderland, right? And Peter Coates says something along the lines of, yes, we have. And Danny Hickabottom takes that as a sign that he should leave. He sort of seems to go like, oh, well, if you're willing to accept that there's been a bid for me, I should probably go. It's such an odd bit.
Yeah.
It's a really weird moment.
I don't understand why he goes Sunderland.
It's so odd because he spends the whole last chapter being like, I love Stoke. I was doing so well there, having a great time. And you're like...
So is Sunderland next minute.
Yeah, he's suddenly at Sunderland to be managed under Roy Keane.
He loves Roy Keane as well, which is unusual because everyone else in football doesn't.
At one point, a pig fire makes him late for training. Like such a fire, weird story. It's really odd. Like a truck like catches fire and there are some pigs nearby, and so Danny Higginbottom was like, there was a pig fire, I got late for training, I turned up, and Roy Keane was like, why are you late? And I said, pig fire.
And he used that excuse before.
Yeah. Oh god,
you're a bit hungover on a Monday. Oh,
another
pig fire.
I'm sorry. It was the coronavirus before coronavirus. So it was definitely the excuse. And
COVID-19. I'm sorry. Right, I'm
it's a very serious situation. Okay. And then later on he says like, oh, and that was the beginning of the end because I got fined for that and I realised that Sunderland wasn't the place for me, and Roy Keane started to be mean to me and other players because he was too harsh. It's sort of then as quick as that he then moves back to Stoke.
Yeah, he's playing Stoke, faces Sunderland.
Yeah.
In this week's dramatic reading.
Oh yeah.
This story is called, oh, can someone cue the dramatic music for me?
Cue dramatic music. Are you ready? Music.
I think so. Dramatic music playing.
Sounds dramatic.
I can hear it. Yeah, that sounds dramatic.
Yeah, you can hear it. I'm not just imagining that. This isn't like that. Well, we should explain the concept of dramatic readings.
Oh yeah, we read the book dramatically. Have I said the name of the story?
No, what's the story? God,
okay, this story is called Rory. But Danny Higginbottom buys Rory Delap some pants. Okay, here we go. Rory Delap's got a bad injury. I was concerned, and I'll admit straight up that my focus was solely on Rory's condition. He was 30, and the injury was so bad that there was a natural and obvious concern that it might cost him his career. Not a funny start.
No, not fun at all.
Not the funniest start to the story.
Doesn't get that much funnier. It's just odd.
It gets slow. It's a weird. Gets worse, I would argue, and then it gets funnier.
By the end, you'll be rolling in the aisles. Rory obviously spent some time in hospital, and our old friends again, not funny. And our old friend Scouse went to see him. Who's Scouse again?
John McKeown. It was.
Let's move on.
Let's assume it was Rupert Lowe.
I called Scouse before I went and asked if Rory needed anything. He said that Rory was still a bit of a mess, hadn't had a shower or anything, so could I get him some boxer shorts?
Those two things don't lead on. That's not. Those two. I don't understand that.
It was about 8 p.m. and everywhere was shut. I didn't know what else to do except get my best clean pair and take them to him. I love how he says clean. Clean is very important thing.
Well, my best pair was in the wash.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah. I mean, they're still pretty good. They're dirty, but.
I stopped on my way to the garage and got some sweets and a massive teddy bear for him to try and lighten the mood. First of all, I think getting him a teddy bear is the weirdest part of the story.
I think it depends if he puts the pants on the teddy bear. Then you have to think about the idea of the teddy bear having genitals. Which is always concerning.
But then, with this story, you have to think about Rory Delap's genitals.
That's true. You guys think about Rory Delap's genitals?
Well, you should be.
Okay, so Franny Benelli's genitals are really high.
Yeah.
Where are Rory Delap's genitals? Quite low.
He's getting older. This is about 8 p.m. Where are we? He's got a teddy bear. I stopped at a garage and got him a teddy bear. I got to the hospital and gave them to him, and then passed him the bag with the boxer shorts in it and told him I bought him. Rory just looked at me really strangely, almost ungrateful. I knew Rory, and I knew he wasn't unnaturally ungrateful. He was very unselfish, so I just put it down to the painkilling medication and thought nothing of it. That medication that naturally makes you ungrateful. Yeah.
You ungrateful.
Side effects. And a bit
ungrateful.
Of a dick.
Yeah. Do you think it was the teddy bear? I think it was the teddy bear that made him furious.
I think that's what freaked him out.
I'd be totally freaked out.
A teddy bear killed my father. What are you doing?
Tony and John Rudge came in shortly after with Rory's parents. I said my goodbyes and left. Rory had his operation, was on the mend, and I went around to see Scouse just to have a chat about it. I shared my concerns about Rory being ungrateful, and Scouse agreed. He said he thought it was out of order. It wasn't something I was holding against Rory, of course, but it was something on my mind, and with Scouse saying I was justified in my concern, it made it more real in a way. A lot of story about this Scouse guy.
Who I assume is just a figment of his imagination.
Yeah.
At this point, sure.
He goes around to see Rory. About the boxer shorts, I started. Danny, why the F did you bring me boxer shorts? Well, Scouse has seen you and told me that you needed some. Danny, I didn't ask for anything. Oh, his wife.
He then said, but Scouse. And then Rory said, Scouse has been dead for 25 years.
His wife, Helena, brought him plenty of clean underwear, as you would expect. Scouse was just winding me up, and like a D-head,
nice.
I fell for it. Stitched me up.
It's such a weird rubbish prank, though.
It's such a weird prank. It would also require such a lot of like explaining it.
But also, if Rory Delap and Danny Higginbotham were such good friends,
yeah,
you'd be like,
he would just have gone, I don't need them. Well, yeah. My wife's brought me them. Why did he just go
for 3 weeks? Like, not mention it.
Just silently stare at the bag as if to be like, pants, pants. Why, pants? So odd.
I think it was the teddy.
Yeah.
It was the teddy.
I'd like a new pair of pants.
Okay, well, we can stop off on the way back to London.
Can you get me teddy bear as well?
You get your teddy bear and pants.
James, have you got a context quote?
Yeah.
Cool. Can we hear it?
Yeah. A player wouldn't be considered if they were tossing off in training.
That was out of context.
Very out of context. We will give no context to it.
Yeah, talking of injuries, he goes on about his own injury. And the book kind of changes, chapter 18, to a diary out of nowhere.
He gets a horrible, horrible injury that talks about, like, his something snapping, a lot of tendons snapping.
But I thought it was interesting. It changed. The whole book changes to a diary. Like, he says, at that time, I was so depressed, I kept a diary. And just starts going through the entries in there.
And it's interesting because he talks about his wife, like, for the most of this bit. Like, it's basically him being like, I don't know what I would do without her.
Oh, and he hasn't mentioned his wife at any other point.
Yeah, at no other point that he mentions his wife. Yeah. It's sort of like his children just appear.
This is 240.
Like a stalk.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And then at one point he's like, I split up with this woman who I was with. I'm not going to go into it because it's weird. And you're like, yeah, but... during his diary, he suddenly becomes like this emotional person who talks about his wife a bit more.
It's nice.
Which is nice, yeah.
He gets married to this woman a year before, and there's this one... It's all like things like... Today I had a good day. I feel like I might have turned a corner. Today was a bad day. I went down in training. One point it says, probably the worst prophecy I've ever read. Monday, May 16th. It's Nicole and mine's first wedding anniversary tomorrow. And if someone had said that within that year, we'd have had a son, I'd have a messed up knee and have thought they were crazy. You know when someone says that to you? Yeah. Don't be stupid.
On your wedding day. You're like, all right, in a year's time, you're not going to have a knee anymore, but you'll have a son. You'd be like, I guess that could happen, sure. Who are you? What are you doing here, Rory?
Scouse.
Scouse? What are you doing? Tell me this, Scouse.
And then his career kind of ends. He stops enjoying it. He leaves Stoke.
His career ends, and then it goes back to the start of the book where he talks about how his career ends, and then the book starts again.
Just and then he gets into meth.
Yeah.
At that point. That's roughly when he gets into meth.
At that point, he starts selling meth.
Doesn't get into meth.
Takes on the Mexican cartel, and that's it.
Yeah. Did this book change you guys?
Okay, so one thing I think that is really interesting about this book is Danny's relationship with Man United. And it really, I think it's the first book we've read where it's someone who was a youth player at a big club, has gone on to do other things, but still talks about that playing at a youth club so much to the point that, like, the whole of the last chapter is basically the Man United way. He always talks about, like, Sir Alex Ferguson's influence on him. He doesn't mention Stoke, Southampton, any of the other clubs he played for after 21 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of inherently very interesting. And I suppose it sort of did make me think more about Danny Higginbotham as, like, as a person, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because he also talks about how he doesn't feel like he deserves to play for Man United. Like, there are like, Legends games, and they're like, Danny, you should play for us. But he's like, no, I can't, because I only, you know, I can be boot boys to you guys, but I never did anything United.
Mm.
I think, in that sense, I actually have thought about this book quite a lot since reading it.
Sounds that way.
Like, at home, sometimes, I'm just sort of like, yeah, what is Danny thinking now? But yeah, it's definitely a more interesting book than a lot of the other ones we've read for that reason.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
James, change your life?
Definitely not. No, it's kind of what I expected in a way. I think he's a bit hard on himself with the whole Man U thing, because the players who are around him, like, it was super difficult to get.
He was playing the youth team in 1999. Which is the treble year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
there's no way he was getting into that team.
Yeah. He played a little bit.
He played a bit, and it's quite impressive.
It shows he was a good player.
But it's that thing of not wanting to talk about anything but United.
Yeah.
I was definitely expecting there to be more Stoke and less United, I think.
Sure.
Personally.
Hey.
But I find it really interesting for that reason.
Look, to rise, he has to show why he was an underdog at United first, and I guess that's why he put so much emphasis into it, because he decided the title before the book. Before he wrote the book. I'm going to do a little quiz. As we're in Southampton, Hey, this week you're named after some of the 37 coaches Danny worked under in 3 seasons at Southampton. Jack, you're Steve Wigley.
Yay!
And James, you're Sir Clive Woodward OBE. Not technically a coach, but yeah, it was there. Question one, what are the rules of peanuts?
Oh my God.
Shout your name if you know.
Peanuts.
Steve Wigley? Wait,
I'll repeat the question.
Steve Wigley.
Sure, yeah.
Was it flicking peanuts into someone's open mouth as they slept?
No, but that's a great game.
It is a great game. We're playing it on the train back.
I drove.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do not flick peanuts in my mouth while I'm driving. It's late. Clive Woodward, OBE, any idea?
No idea.
Okay. The rules of peanuts, it's a drinking game where if somebody had any peanuts by the drink, you're allowed to smash them.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
about
that.
You want to play peanuts?
What?
Yeah.
Question two, which player who was all over you like a rash is one of his hardest ever opponents?
Oh, crap. Oh, what's my name? Fuck.
No! Oh, we got all the way through it and you said...
Superpod. I'm so sorry.
The university
Steve Wigley.
Had to disband.
I'm so sorry. Steve Wigley. That's
please.
My name.
Yes, please.
Was it Paul Dickoff?
It was Paul Dickoff.
Yes.
Point
what?
Thank
you. That was worth
Steve
a swear.
Wigley.
What's wrong with
Steve,
you?
I don't know. I really remember that.
You do read these books.
Yeah, I do.
Just because he pays attention, doesn't he?
I paid attention.
Thank you, teacher.
And question three, final question. Let's whose see. Appendix burst during Gordon Strachan's preseason training? Which is pretty rigorous.
I know this as well.
Southampton legend. Any idea, Sir Clive Woodward, OBE?
Yeah, I remember this.
Rugby legend.
I did pay attention, I promise. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, hang on.
Wow. Klaus Lundervam is the correct answer.
That's amazing. So someone from the audience has just beaten both of us.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You
cool.
drew with yeah. audience.
Well done. What's you have name? To read these books now, okay?
Yeah. Well done. You made Danny proud. We've been told we have a surprise, and we genuinely have no idea what this means.
I'm really scared.
We've been scared for the 3 days since I've known this.
Very scary.
It's nothing to be scared of.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I want to find some way of saying thank you.
Okay.
So I spoke to a lovely guy called Andy, who is Danny Higginbottom's agent.
Oh, no!
Danny couldn't be here today because it's his kid's birthday.
Okay.
However, on Monday, I received an email from his agent with this.
Hey everybody, Danny Higginbottom here. Sorry I can't be there today, but I'd just like to thank everybody at the Football Book Podcast for serialising my autobiography, The Rise of the Underdog. It was a pleasure to do it with Wayne Barton. There's some fantastic stories in there about my time scrum up at Manchester United and various other clubs, and of course Southampton. So hopefully you enjoy reading it. If you do decide to get it, and like I say, hope it's a good week.
Wow, Danny Higginbottom.
Danny Higginbottom.
We love you, Danny.
Yeah. We've got to cut a lot of this podcast.
I bet you feel bad now, James, being mean about him.
I wasn't mean. Was I?
No.
I said right from the beginning, I like Danny Higginbottom a lot.
Thank you so much. That's really, really nice.
That was
thank
really,
you so,
really cool.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
Thank you,
Alan, Danny Higginbottom.
And thank you to Danny Higginbottom.
Thank you, Steve Wigley.
Yeah. Wiggers!
Anyone has any thoughts on the book, like Danny himself, if you've read it or you want to read along, message us, reviews, follow us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram, review the podcast, subscribe, follow us. Any last words?
Superpod?
What swear word were you trying to cover up with that?
Oh, a lot. The worst one. Imagine the worst one. Yeah, all of them in one go.
Rupert Lowe.
Rupert Lowe.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, James Balgen, and Jack Bernhardt. It was created and produced by James Bug. Thanks to Danny Higginbottom for writing the book. But I hear you cry, what in the superpod are they up to now? Well, Danny Higginbottom now enjoys a successful career in the media, supplemented by his extracurricular income from golf balls and Brussels sprouts. Rory Delap is still wearing Danny Higginbottom's pants to this day, no idea if he kept the bear or not. Nobody by the name of Scouse has been seen or heard of in the past 100 years, spooky. Roy Chunky Rodriguez is still waiting for his first international call-up, and Paul Bowerton has now counted every single toe in the county of Derbyshire. We'll see you soon for more Football Book Club. Make sure you share, review, and subscribe. Bye-bye.